welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your tennis game. Thank you for joining me today. I have a couple of great questions lined up. We are going to discuss serving and volleying and how to do it correctly in your doubles play and how to do it so that you don't feel rushed and under the gun and kind of scrambling around and being all crazy while you're trying to attack and be aggressive with your positioning and moving quickly right away off your serve. Something that I really think is a good thing to be good at, a good thing to be comfortable with if you want to be a good doubles player. So we're going to discuss that. We're also going to talk about the correct way to watch the ball, actually physically, how to actually track the ball with your eyes. And I have a good listener question asking whether or not you're supposed to keep your eyes at the point of contact. So we're going to talk about that as well. I'm really encouraged by the amount of questions I've had coming in, both on the forums and also through email. It's kind of a good and a bad thing. Obviously, it's great that I'm getting more and more questions. It means that people out there really are passionate about their tennis and they do want to improve. On the other hand, I can't always get to everybody's question right away anymore. And I apologize for that. However, I will continue to do my best in answering every question I receive. In fact, I promise you guys I will. If you do take the time to write to me, even if I don't use it here on the podcast or in the blog and write about it, I promise you I will get back to you and help you as best I can by giving you good information and good instruction. Now, last week I told you guys I was going to announce the Essential Tennis Getaway that I have planned. I'm going to talk about that at the end of the podcast today, just for a minute or two, because I want to get to the instruction right away. So if you are interested in taking a trip with me and get private instruction from me on a cool vacation getaway, make sure that you listen all the way through and listen to the end of the podcast. I'm going to make an announcement on that. So I will see you guys at the end of the show and tell you about the getaway coming up. But for right now, sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Q&A.
All right, let's get started here on podcast number 36. I'm excited about answering these questions today. This first question comes from Michelle in Massachusetts. And Michelle, I just heard from her for the first time. I think it was last week or the week before. Michelle, it was great to hear from you and get your question, and I'm happy to help you out. Michelle wrote and said, I play between a 3.0 and 3.5 level on a fall league. I'm having a problem with my serve and volley. I know that you have spoken about this for a bit, but my problem is that I'm having a hard time with my timing / reaction time. I don't seem to have the quick second reaction allowing me to respond and come to the net. Consequently, I'm held at the baseline and running for the volleys that my opponents are hitting to me. For example, today I played doubles with a team that were clearly a 3.5 to 4.0 team. One of the women had absolutely beautiful shots and able to give back anything that was given to her, no matter what kind of pace or spin that we gave to her. Let me make it clear that I don't have a problem with the level of tennis, but my inadequate means of getting to the net after volleying. I've taken lessons, and this is not a problem, but in doubles, I hesitate coming to the net, especially against these ladies. I felt that no matter what I gave them, i.e. serve or ground stroke, I was always lagging behind. I have been playing for only 4 years, averaging about three times a week. And then lastly, she says, my coach said that I need to come in no matter what, even if I seem to be getting burned. Makes sense, but I'm not sure how long I should keep repeating this before I would decide to stay back. Well, great question, Michelle. And this is something, and at the club where I teach, we have seven different ladies teams that myself and the two other full-time teaching professionals coach. And trust me, this is a question. All seven of these teams are different levels, ranging from complete beginners to probably four or five level doubles. It's all doubles. And in that wide range of players, we get this type of question all the time about coming to the net, when to come to the net, and how to do it correctly. And in the lower level, more beginner level players, they're not comfortable doing this. And so on one hand, I kind of agree with your coach as she's telling you, you need to keep on coming in because it is important that you get comfortable with it. But on the other hand, you don't want to stick with a losing strategy either. So let's talk about this, Michelle. And I sent her another email asking her just to clarify if it was the volleys themselves that she was having problems with. I asked her, you know, how good is your volley technique? If you get all the way up to the net or if you start at the net in a point, are you comfortable making volleys? Or is it more the transition between your first shot and getting up to the volleys that's the problem? And she reiterated to me that it's the transition period in between her first shot and actually getting to the point where she's hitting volleys. So starting with a serve or with a return of serve. Now, first of all, Michelle, I wanted to encourage you that you're doing a great job working on advancing your game. And like I said a second ago, I do agree with your coach. Coming in to the net in doubles is what you want to continue to do if you want to improve as a doubles player. The best doubles players in the world are comfortable coming into the net on all different types of shots and in all different types of circumstances. That being said, they also know when it's smart to stay back. And you will see different formations in professional doubles. It's not just everybody charging in all the time. But that being said, trust me, they're all comfortable coming in when it's the right thing to do. So it's important that you are comfortable moving forwards and making that transition. Now, this is not an easy skill, and it's something that few people are comfortable with right away. Where, you know, I'll say to a student who's kind of just starting out with doubles, all right, you're going to serve and go right to the net. You're going to hit your serve, and then the very next shot, I want you to try to take as a volley. Very, very few people are comfortable with that, and they'll just say, oh, okay, sure, and then hit their serve and move in, and bam, just make the volley. It's something that is kind of a special skill all by itself. So don't feel badly that you're having a little bit of trouble getting comfortable with it. There's a lot of nuances and kind of reactions that you have to learn to make part of your game before you're truly good at it. And so it's just like any other part of the game. You just have to get comfortable with it by continuing to do it, learn small things to improve on, and continue to get more comfortable. And that's why I'm here. I'm here to help you out with a couple of small things here that I have a pretty good hunch that you need to work on. Now, based on how you answered my questions, it's not that you're having issues with your strokes themselves. You say you can hit good approach shots and that you can make your volleys, but your problem is during the transition period between the two. Most of the time, that means that the player is trying to hit volleys while rushing into the net too quickly. And so they're getting caught off balance and unprepared to reproduce good volley technique. If I would start this type of player already up at the net in a volley position and fire balls at them, usually this type of player, when all the way up at the net already, doesn't have any trouble making their volleys. But when coming from the baseline and trying to make it to the point where they're all the way up at the net, they're making mistakes in between. Now, you can come to the net in one of three basic ways. I categorized three different ways that you can make it to the net. The first one being the bum rush, kind of all or nothing. Just charge in just as fast as you can. And it's kind of all or nothing for players at first. And that's our first category, is moving in as fast as you can and just trying to do your best to take the first ball out of the air no matter what. And if your opponent's shot isn't right to you, the volley tends to be very difficult. This is kind of what sounds like is going on with your game, Michelle. The second way is to be tentative and stay back for several shots and kind of make your way in slowly or when it's convenient to come into the net. And this is kind of a reactive style of doubles, and one that's safer. But the problem with this is you're giving your opponent the chance to come in and take over the net before you do. So it's easier in terms of reaction time. You can wait for the ball to bounce a couple of times and maybe wait for a short ball and come in off of something that's really easy. And this makes it easier and safer. However, you're not really going to challenge yourself as you keep trying to improve your game. Moving in more quickly is going to pressure your opponents much more than staying back and taking ground strokes instead. So you could probably be more successful now doing this type of doubles, staying back and kind of waiting for your chance. And you say in your email that's what you're doing currently when you don't feel comfortable coming forwards. But let me tell you, if you stay in this strategy and you stay back where it's comfortable, you're only going to make it so far in your doubles play. So in your matches now, it may be the right thing to do if you're going to win the most amount of points currently by staying back and staying where it's comfortable. However, let me encourage you, Michelle, to start as soon as possible, continuing to be more comfortable at moving forwards. And that brings us to our third way that you can come to the net. The first one was the bum rush, all or nothing. The second one was tentative, stay back for several shots and or make your way in slowly, which gives your opponent a chance to come in before you and take over. And the third one is in between. You want to move in right away and move in quickly, but balance yourself in preparation for your opponent's shot as soon as they get ready to hit. And the way you do this is by using a split step. And Michelle, I'm sure that over 4 years of taking lessons, you've probably heard this term before. I'm going to go over it here and make sure that you fully understand it and make sure everybody else listening fully understands how this is supposed to be done correctly to make sure that you are, in fact, completing this. And if you've never heard of this, this is absolutely what your problem is. If you have heard of it and you think you're doing it now, I'll get to that a little bit later. But first, let's talk about what it is and how to do it correctly. A split step balances your body and prepares your body to be able to move in any direction. It does this by putting you in a neutral position. In other words, a ready position. A good ready position puts your body in a neutral stance. That means that you are facing your opponents. Your shoulders, your hips, your toes are pointed forwards. You're facing forwards towards the other side of the court, towards your opponent where the ball has gone. And your feet are at least shoulder width apart. In fact, they should be wider than shoulder width apart. And you should be in a stance where your legs are slightly bent. Your weight should be slightly forwards. And you should be standing with your weight on your toes. So you should be on your toes, legs slightly bent, weight slightly forward so that you've got kind of a little bit of a lean, and your stance should be nice and wide. Also, the last thing is your hands should be in front of you so that you're prepared to move your racket to either side, and your body is prepared to move to the right, to the left, forwards, or backwards. You're ready to catch yourself and move in any direction because you are in a ready position. And the most important thing about your split step is not so much the actual stance or the actual position. Everybody knows, what a ready position is, but the timing of it is what is essential here. If you don't time your split step correctly, you can be thrown off balance very, very easily. If you split step too early, let's say you're hitting a serve, you hit your serve and you start moving in, but you split step early, you're not making the most of the time that you have available. You could be moving in closer and farther before you make your split step. Secondly, if you split step too late, you get rushed and you're going to be off balance trying to hit a volley in an uncomfortable position. And this sounds like what you're doing, Michelle. It sounds like you're probably split step. If you are split stepping, it sounds like you're doing it too late. And you're being rushed by your opponent's shot. You don't have the time to react to it. You're getting jammed up, and you're trying to make volleys from really uncomfortable positions where it's just too tough to make the ball consistently. The correct way to split step is to time it so that your feet are touching down. You're landing on your toes, feet apart, wider than shoulder width. You're touching down in that good, wide, ready position the moment that your opponent is making contact with the ball. And this is the most important part about your split step. If you split step before your opponent makes contact, you're wasting time. You could be moving in farther and further pressuring your opponent and making the volley easier for you by getting closer to the net. If you wait till after your opponent hits to make your split step, now you're going to be closer to the net, but the ball is already coming on its way to you before you get yourself in balance. And if you don't get yourself in balance until after your opponent is hit, you're wasting your own time, and the ball is going to be on top of you before you know it. And Michelle, this is what sounds like is happening in your play. You're trying to move in and serve and volley, and you're doing an admirable job of it. You're hitting your serve and moving in very quickly, but the problem is your opponent's return is rushing you, and you're not in a comfortable position. So you're either not split-stepping, or you are split-stepping, but it's too late. And the ball is already on top of you when you get in balance, and you don't have time to make a comfortable volley. A good doubles player is able to hit their serve or their return, move in very quickly, probably 2, 3, or maybe 4 steps at the most, and then split step and land as soon as their opponent makes contact. Then they read as they're landing in their split step where the ball is going, then their feet start again, and you move towards the ball in a balanced manner. And if that means the ball is coming directly at you, then you're moving to the side. You're sidestepping and making a comfortable volley. If the ball is to your right or to your left, you're going from your ready position and transferring your weight right over to the right or to the left, whichever direction the ball is coming in. If it's a lob, you're in balanced position. You're able to catch your weight, push back, and then move back and retrieve the lob. If you don't split step at the right time, you're going to be off balance trying to get to these shots. Then a good doubles player makes that split step, they make that move to the ball, they hit the shot, and then repeat the process. They'll make contact, move in quickly again. When their opponent makes contact, they will split step again. And the timing of this is completely different from shot to shot, depending on when the ball gets to your opponent. That's the important part. Your time in this with your opponent's shot, when they make contact, is when you should be split stepping. Now, Michelle, if you've already been taught the split step, but serving and volleying just still doesn't feel good, it's not comfortable, then one of four things is happening. This is the last thing I'm going to go over here before we wrap this up. Either you think you're doing it, but you're not, and you know, you've been taught it, and just about every tennis professional has been trained to say, split step, blah, 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 and you may not have, you know, actually picked it up, and you may not actually be doing it or doing it correctly. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Either you think you're doing it, but you aren't. That's number one. Or you're doing it, but it's too late to be effective. And so you are split-stepping, but you're rushed anyway because your split-step is too late. So it's very possible that you are doing it, but you haven't been taught to do it at the correct time. And so the ball is on top of you as you're split-stepping, and you're still being rushed. That's number two. Number three, it's possible you're doing it and doing it correctly, but there's a technique problem with either your deep volleys or half volleys. Usually when you serve in volley or return in volley, your first volley or half volley is going to be made contact with somewhere behind the service line, either in no man's land or somewhere close to the service line, but very, very rarely are you going to serve in volley and make contact in front of the service line. Your opponent's return or your serve would have to be very weak for you to have enough time to get that far in. So it's possible that on your first volley or half volley, there's a technique breakdown that's causing you to kind of panic and rush. You made it sound like your technique is fine. That's not the problem. But if you are split-stepping correctly and still losing these points, it's possible there is a technique issue that's happening here. And then the last problem that we could be having is your split-step, your half volley, and your volley techniques are fine. You're timing your split step correctly, and your half volley and volley techniques are perfectly fine. But Michelle, it could be that you're just not comfortable with this fast play of pace yet in good doubles. when you have all four players trying to make it to the net and pressure their opponents, the reality is things happen very, very quickly. And so you may be doing these things correctly, but you just don't have the experience yet to where you're comfortable and used to this pace of play. If you're used to staying back and hitting ground strokes and playing one up, one back doubles, going from that to serve and volley just accelerates everything, the pace of play so much more. And so it takes some time to become accustomed to how quickly the ball comes back to you after you've made a shot. And this is something I struggle with. I'm lucky. I'm happy to play, I don't know, two or three times a month currently, up to my own pace, what's competitive for myself. The other 40 hours a week I'm on a court are teaching, and this is play that's well below whatever my competitive pace of play is. And the more I teach, the more when I go back to my own pace in doubles, the more my timing lags behind. And it's something that you have to build up over time and get used to. And your reaction time gets quicker and quicker the more experience you have in doing this. And it's something that you can learn. It's something that can be unlearned, like what I'm describing. I don't play a lot of tennis anymore competitively. And as a result, it takes me several games or sometimes a set when I go back and start to play doubles at my speed again. It takes time for my eyes to kind of wake up and start tracking the ball at a faster pace. And if it's something that you haven't learned yet, Michelle, it might take some time, even if your split step and your volley techniques are good. So, Michelle, that's my answer to your question. We went over a lot of material there, and one of those four things I just said are the case here. If you're still having issues and not comfortable with your serve and volley, one of those four things is happening, all right? It's going to boil down to one of those four things. I want you to really be aware and kind of conscious of what's going on the next time you play after listening to this, next time you practice or play, and report back to me and tell me, give me a little bit more of a definitive answer. Now that I know that you fully understand what you're supposed to be doing, I'd love to hear what you think, which of those four things is causing your problems in your serve and volley. Lastly, Michelle, you posted another good question on the forums about taking lessons with your regular coach that you've been with for a long period of time, and you feel like you've kind of hit a wall with this pro who's been giving you lessons. And myself and one other forum member kind of asked you further questions about it to get some more information, and I'd love to answer that question for you, but you haven't been back to answer those yet. So I'd love to see you back on the forums, answer the secondary question I asked you, and we can get that question answered for you as well.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group. Is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com.
All right, let's get to our second question. And our second topic has to do with watching the ball and specifically keeping your head still past the point of contact when you make contact with the ball. This is something we only have about 5 minutes to talk here, and I could really discuss this for quite a long time and probably bore a lot of you, I would think, because it's something that seems like quite a kind of a trivial detail, but this is an essential here. This is something that's very, very important, and I really want you guys to understand it. So let's try to get through this quickly. This question came to me through Sally, one of my favorite contributors of questions. She's very passionate and loves tennis, and I always love to hear from you, Sally. She wrote this on the forums and said, "Ian, I try to make an effort to see the ball leave my opponent's racket travel all the way over to my racket. But then at the point of impact, when I hit the ball, I tend to look up too soon towards my target. Do you believe it's important to keep my head still, even for a fraction of a second after I hit the ball? Thanks, Sally. Well, great question, Sally. Let's go ahead and get right into this. I'm going to try to get through this quickly, but still make sure that you understand what's important here. So let's talk about keeping your head still after contact. Is keeping your head still essential to good essential to good tennis? The short answer is no. That's the short answer. There are specific players and specific situations where professional level players do not watch the ball all the way to contact or leave their head still and leave their eyes watching the point of contact until after the ball has left their racket. And I've seen countless photos of professional players both keeping their head still and eyes at the point of contact, and as well as not. Some players tend to not keep their eyes and follow the ball all the way to the racket, and you can see evidence of that in photographs of those players making contact. Some players always do watch the ball all the way to their strings. So if you're a professional player, it's to a certain extent kind of personal preference, kind of what you're used to. But these are professional players, and they're all still capable of hitting incredible shots, regardless of whether or not they keep their head still through the point of contact. Now, that was the short answer. Here comes the long answer. As it applies to the recreational level player, we're not talking about professional players anymore. We're talking about the recreational club level player. And by recreational level, I mean anything up through level 4.5 and the NTRP rating system. If you're a legitimate, and yes, legitimate, there are illegitimate 5.0 plus players out there. If you're a legitimate 5.0 player and you're making good contact is not your problem as a 5.0 player. You're not going to increase from 5.0 to 5.5 by hitting your frame less. If you're a high level player, 5.0 or above, you've been proficient at hitting the middle of your racket for quite some time already. And so this is probably not something you have to worry about and obsess over. However, for the rest of you, listen, if you're a 6.0 player listening to this, you can go ahead and skip this. In fact, you probably don't need to listen to most of these podcasts because that's not where most tennis players are. Most tennis players are at a lower level than that. That's why I'm talking to you guys. For everybody else, making poor contact accounts for a very large percentage of mistakes made in tennis. I see a lot of tennis every day at the club level, from 2.0 all the way up to 4.5. Every day I see those levels of tennis. And making poor contact, hitting somewhere other than the middle of the racket, is a huge percentage of overall mistakes made at the club level of tennis. Making poor contact over and over is the result of poor concentration and focus on the ball. It means that your eyes were most likely taken off the ball before it hit your racket, and that could happen for one of many reasons. It could be that you were looking at where your opponent was moving, seeing where they're going to be going to try to cover your oncoming shot. It could be that you looked at your target on the other side of the court. This happens all the time. Players get easy shots. They come up and they physically turn their head and look at their target before they make contact. I see this countless times per day, taking the eyes off the ball and putting them on the target. It could be that you were distracted by an outside, somebody not even playing, an observer or a teammate, or it could just be a poor habit. You've never watched the ball hit your racket in the first place, and it's just not something that you've made a habit because you haven't really been aware of, and you don't even know that you're not watching the ball well in the first place. Literally tracking the ball all the way to your racket is essential for everybody listening because out of your 180 degrees of total vision, as humans, we have 180 degrees of vision. Only 3 degrees of those 180 are actually focused and sharp. That's only 1.7% of your vision. The rest of your vision is blurry. It's your peripheral vision. And so the chances of you hitting the middle of your racket using your blurry peripheral vision, the chances of you hitting the middle of your racket using that blurry vision is substantially less than keeping your 3 degrees of sharp vision on the ball the entire time. If you take your focused vision off the ball and put it somewhere else on the court, I don't care where it is, if it's not on the ball, all the way up until you make contact, if you're not making a physical effort to do that, or if you haven't already made it a habit where you don't have to think about it anymore, chances of you making good contact are not nearly as good as they could be. Now, keeping your head still past the point of contact is a physical and a mental discipline. It's an exaggeration to help develop the skill of watching the ball all the way into the point of contact. And so is it essential to good tennis? No, it's not. You don't have to do it to be a great player. However, if you're not already a great player, exaggerating this, tracking the ball with your eyes in your face and turning your head and looking at the point of contact and keeping your head there until after the point of contact, exaggerating your focus in that way will help make you be a better player if you're not a great player already. It's just good. It's just a good habit to have to help increase your concentration. Now, will you actually see the ball hit the strings and come off during contact? No, you won't. Your eyes and your brain don't work together fast enough to actually physically see the ball hit the strings and come off. We need slow motion video to actually see that happen. And it's cool, by the way, to see slow motion video of contact being made. But the point isn't that you actually see it. And that might sound kind of confusing or contradictory. You won't see the ball actually hit the racket. And that's not the point. The point is not to actually see it hit the strings. The point is to increase your focus and your concentration on the ball. So that is really where your focus is. So that you can give yourself the best possible chance of hitting the middle of the racket. It's something I do myself when I'm playing well. It's something I tend to forget to do when I haven't played for a while because my focus is usually on my students. And I typically make good contact anyway, whether I'm looking or not, because I've hit a lot of tennis balls. And usually in my lessons, I'm hitting at a much slower pace than what I'm capable of. So I don't really need the skill of keeping my head at the point of contact and looking at the point of contact after it's happened. But when I'm playing well, I am doing this, and it's something I recommend to all my students to help improve their concentration. Thank you for the question, Sally. Hopefully that fully answers it. Definitely let me know what you think. Okay, the time has come to announce the first ever Essential Tennis Instructional Getaway. This is something that you guys told me you were interested in the survey I did a couple weeks ago, and I can't wait to offer it to you guys and make it happen. It's going to be a great trip, and I can't wait to meet some of you guys in person and instruct you in person and help you guys even more improve your tennis. Our first Essential Tennis Instructional Getaway is going to be to Costa Rica, which is a beautiful tropical country in Central America. And I can't wait to go. I've never been there before, but this is going to be my first time and probably first time for a lot of you as well who come with me and make the trip. I can't wait to make this happen. Now, there's a couple details that we're still ironing out, so I'm not going to tell you guys exactly which resort yet because we're still working on contract details and that sort of thing, getting the right number of rooms reserved and details like that. But what I will tell you guys is it's going to be hosted. The trip is going to be hosted by myself as well as two other tennis experts. One is author, motivational speaker, and tennis professional Ed Sain. He was my guest on the podcast last week in number 35. And as you guys heard, he's really passionate about tennis. He's really passionate about helping people improve and help them have their peak performance, helping them rise and be the best and most successful person they can be, whether that be at tennis or just in life in general. He's going to be there helping me teach, and he's also going to be giving a presentation. That's what he does. He speaks to groups of people, and we're going to be privileged to have him along on the trip. Your third host is George Marrera. He's a native Costa Rican, and he's a former player on the Costa Rican national tennis team. So he's a great player. He's somebody that I play with here in the D.C. area, and he also helps me teach. He teaches part-time and still plays quite a bit. So he definitely knows what he's doing. He's going to be a great asset down there. The three of us are going to be teaching together and giving group clinics, and you guys will also receive private instruction from myself, as well as a presentation by Ed, helping you with your mental game and helping you reach your peak performance. Now, the resort that we're going to be going to, I'm not going to tell you which one yet, but it will be a 5-star all-inclusive resort. And this is a beautiful, beautiful place. White sand beaches, and they have activities like snorkeling and deep sea fishing, dolphin swims, and they have, of course, 4 lit tennis courts where we're going to be doing our instruction. It's going to be a trip of 5 days and 4 nights. And as part of this trip, you'll be receiving at least 10 hours of tennis instruction, either in a group drill or in private instruction with myself. We're also going to have evening social events, fun, competition, and as I mentioned before, that presentation by Ed as well. So the way I look at this trip, guys, is part tennis camp and part vacation. It's not going to be all tennis all the time. I'm not going to burn you guys out and do 6 hours a day of drills and lessons, but it's going to be part of each. We're definitely going to take the time to go as a group and experience some of Costa Rica, and that's where Jorge is going to come in. Being from Costa Rica, he's going to be a great guide and helping us have some fun while we're there. And yet the three of us are all very focused, and we want you guys to improve, and you will learn and you will improve while you're there with us. Now, this trip is going to be limited to only 12 guests, and I'm going to be making the pricing and all of that, the actual location, available very soon, but we're still hammering some of those details out. If you're very interested in this and want to get your name on the list right away, you can contact me, and I will give you a good idea of the price we're working with. But I'm going to make that available very soon, as soon as we get the everything hammered out with the resort that we're working with. I don't want to tell you guys a number that's incorrect. This is going to be April 14th through 19th, 2009. So plenty of time for you guys to clear your calendars. That's all I'm going to tell you guys for today. I'm going to wrap up the podcast now. I'm going to have full details in the very near future. But I'm really looking forward to this, guys. I'm excited about it, and I hope you guys will be excited about it as well. All right, that does it for today's podcast, episode number 36. Thank you so much for joining me today. Have a great week, everybody. I look forward to hearing from all of you. Good luck with your tennis, and take care.